Final hour of the program here on a gorgeous Friday evening in the great city of Atlanta and the great state of Georgia. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you till the top of the hour. We're going to try something here. I got an idea, and it's ambitious, but you know what? You know what I know? You know why we're going to do this, Oren? Because I know what Mike Conti would say. I didn't need to ask. Mike Conti is a great boss for a lot of reasons. One of them is he is a let's try anything once type of boss. So if I come up with an idea for a segment or a new guest or something I want to try on social media, 99 times out of 100, unless there's like a conflict with like corporate or something that we're not allowed to do, he's going to give us the green light because he is very much so of the belief, hey, listen, you got a 4-hour show, 5 nights a week. Try something new. You never know what's going to hit. Produce a six-pack. We know that works. 5 true and false. That works. We've been doing spinning the wheel a lot lately. And I brought it back. It was something I did for a while on my weekend show. And then it just went away for whatever reason as, you know, things come and go, the ebb and the flow of doing a show. But we've brought it back with great success so far since Chris Thomas tonight got rolling. And we've done MLB. We've done NBA, we've done NFL, and it's all worked great. We do stock up or stock down. So if you're new to the program, we spin the wheel lands on a team, Oren tells me the team, and then we debate if that team is stock up or stock down. Pretty simple concept, nothing groundbreaking here. But, Oren, I got a little frisky. I was like, you know what? It exists. First of all, I had to look up to see if this thing exists. And it does. I found the wheel of college football teams.
This thing looks gnarly, man.
It's crazy. So
it's just words and letters on top of schools and everything in here.
So the way it works is we use the same wheel. There's one wheel site. Mm-hmm. I can't believe somebody took the time
to spin the wheel.
Yeah. So somebody's took the time to do this, and thank God bless them. Thank you. You've provided a lot of content for me on this show. And they've put all the NBA teams on a wheel. You spin it. All the NFL teams on a wheel. All the MLB teams on a wheel, and you spin it. Somebody took the time to put all, I'm guessing it's Division I, college football teams on a wheel for us to spin. And we're going to try this out. We're going to see how it works.
127 teams on this wheel, sir.
Okay, right. So that's your FBS right there. Yeah, this is going to be interesting because this could go one of two ways. It could be, you know, we're going to get Georgia and Texas, or we're going to get not Georgia and Texas.
Yeah, some other random schools.
Yeah, so we're going to try this again. If it works, great. We'll do it again because we could do this all throughout college football season. But if it doesn't, it was an experiment. It was a lesson learned.
And we tried.
Yeah, and I know Mike Conti's out there. He's not shaking his head. He's saying, you know what, Turtle? Appreciate it on a summer Friday, 9 o'clock hour. UNO put your heads together and you came up with something different. So without any further ado, we set it up properly. Oren, oh man, I'm nervous. Let's spin the wheel of college football teams stock up or stock down.
All righty, sir. First team. Let's see what we get here.
I am so nervous right now for this. Oh boy. It probably takes forever to spin around. There's just so many. There's just so many teams.
All right. So the first team, sir, is Texas State. But I'm going to take the state off.
Okay.
And just give you Texas, sir. Stock up, stock down.
Texas State. Man, wow, that is tough. Yeah, Texas obviously stock up. And that's tough because they have all the expectations this year. Oren, would you say it's championship or bust with Arch Manning at quarterback this year?
Oh, my gosh. It has to be.
I think it's got to be, yeah. Right? Like, Georgia has theirs. Bama's not expected to compete for a title this year and with the same amount of pressure that they normally would have under Nick Saban. Oregon maybe has that same kind of pressure. Ohio State just won theirs. So, it's Oklahoma, I don't think, is ready to win a title. So I think it's all eyes on Texas this year. Stock up, and that also comes with great power, comes great responsibility for the Longhorns.
All righty. We're going to spin it again. Here we go. Spinning, Texas spinning, spinning.
State. Come on, man. Oh, boy.
All righty, sir. The next one is Toledo. But in front of Toledo, we're going to do this one instead. Florida State.
Okay. We can work. So it seems like we may need to find a wheel that has less teams on it. Because this 127 or whatever.
Yeah, good news is that I've been able to pivot these first two. So
pivot. That is one of the funniest scenes in television of all time. Florida State. I mean, how can you say stock down based off of where they finished last year? Right.
Well, we're going to see that first game of the season against Alabama.
Oh, they're not going to win.
You're saying though, depending on how bad that game goes, stock down.
Well, you think if they go 2-4 to start the year, Norvell gets canned?
No.
Too much money?
Too much money.
Wow.
Yeah, you just gave this guy an extension, a couple years ago. So, yeah, you can't.
I'm going to say stock up, but it's just by default. Like, they're not going to be 2-10 again this year, are they?
Okay. I get that, but 3-7 or 4-6, that's still not,
it's stock up, technically, right? Do we want to go on a technicality here? I mean,
Technically,
I think they're going to win more than two games. So, yeah, but they're not going to, they're not ready yet. Not yet. A couple more years.
All right, let's spin this wheel again, see where we land.
Alcorn State. Let's break it down. Your North Carolina A&T.
All righty. So this one is UNLV, but a few spaces down, I see Georgia Tech. Stock up, stock down.
Okay. Again, we are working our way around this.
Working this wheel,
man. We're working it. Stock up, man. I like Georgia Tech this year. Haynes King is a good quarterback. They obviously got a really good running game. You know Coach Key is going to want to get messy with it.
Oh, my gosh.
They're going to play a lot of 17-14 games, but that's what they should.
Some ugly wins.
Yeah, that's what they should be doing. And again, I know I keep harping on this. I'm telling you right now, I can pull it up. It's not going to take me but 2 seconds to pull up. They have an incredibly favorable schedule. You start off at Colorado, I get it. Gardner Webb at home, then you get Clemson, but then you go Temple, Wake Forest, Virginia Tech. Those should all be wins. Then you go Duke, that should be a win. Syracuse, that should be a win with McCord out of there. NC State, that should be a win. BC, that should be a win. Pittsburgh, that's a toss-up. And then you get Georgia. I mean, there's 9 wins in there, right? That's their schedule. I mean, I think Clemson's a guaranteed loss. And I think Georgia's a guaranteed loss. Outside of that, I think they should be in every game. So, Ramblin' Wreck, go do it, baby. 9 wins.
All right, spinning again here, sir. All righty, so we're not going to pick this at all.
Okay, what did it land on? Oh, my goodness. The Fighting Josh Allens?
There we go, the Fighting Josh Allens. Appalachian State, the Fighting Andy Bunker's wives. That's Ashley's team.
I think we're going to have to spin again.
We're going to spin again. We're not going to do Army.
Well, you know what?
You know what, though? Hey, you know what? I'm going to take an Army opponent. How about that? Army plays Notre Dame every year, sir.
Okay.
Notre Dame, stock up, stock down.
Stock up. Marcus Freeman's got that thing cooking, huh? And he's just so handsome. He is. I got a man crush on Marcus Freeman, man.
He always has very nice looking hair. His hair is always very nicely cut.
And he's got beautiful eyes and a razor sharp jawline. And he has a beautiful family. You ever see his family?
I've seen his kids. I've seen his wife.
He has just a picture. Like that's the family. You know, like when you go to the store and you buy a picture frame.
Photo in the frame.
Yeah, they're the family that's in the picture frame. That is true Americana at its finest right there. Literally and figuratively. Man, I hope this doesn't get clipped. So this is going to be a stock-up situation. I like them coming into this year. I think they have a chance to make the Final Four.
All righty. I just spun again, and I'm not going to pick the school that landed on Michigan State, but instead, let's play their rival here, Michigan.
Oh, stock way down. And we'll make this the last one. Sharon Moore, You believe in him more? No.
We did it, man. Coach, this one's for you. Coach Harbaugh.
No. Stock down. They're going to finish, ooh, fourth in the Big Ten? Not good for Big Blue. All right, so this was a...
I got one more because it actually ended on this school.
Oh, well, yes.
I'm going to ask you about it because their head coach is in the news. Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers, sir. Stock up, stock down.
Stock down. They're not doing what they did again this year. That dude, no. Fool me once. They're not doing it again this year. No way. I'm just going to say hard no on that one. All right, this was... I don't want to call it a failure, but there's room to grow. I think what I'm going to have to do is try to find a more concise wheel.
Probably, yes.
Like, maybe there's an SEC wheel. And we can do an SEC stock up, stock down.
Power four wheel.
Or there's a Big Ten wheel, or maybe something like that. But there's something here. We just got to find it, right? This was like the... raw file version of it, and we got to do all the editing and the condensing and all that stuff. But this was fun. Good job, Oren. Appreciate you helping me out here. All right, when we get back, Joe Patrick, boots on the ground at Falcons camp. What does he think about what's going on there? This was before the news broke about DJ Chark, but thankfully Mooney's not going to miss, it looks like, any game time, so Chark will be able to try to make a name for himself in camp, and then Mooney will come back and take his rightful place as wide receiver number two. All right, it is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till the top of the hour. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Joe Patrick is next. I think this is becoming the theme song for Joe Patrick's interviews, and I definitely don't hate it. Dun-na-na, dun-na. It fits the mood of the night. Gorgeous night here in the A in the great state of Georgia.
I feel like we're the only show that's put very, like, distinct thought into the song that welcomes in Joe Patrick when he does an appearance.
Well, I can tell you this. I'm not doing no boxing match clashing or anything like that and listing heights and weights as is done on other shows. We get straight to the business with Joe Patrick.
He doesn't cause trouble with us.
No, we're not.
There's no trouble with Joe and you and I on the show.
We're not looking to cause a ruckus. We're looking to get Falcons information and promote his podcast, Joe Patrick on Football. That's all we're here to do. So let's welcome him in. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
This song is the most confrontational or whatever the word is they use for me.
Yeah, that's
over on Andy and Randy. But it's
your non-confrontational driving playlist. That's what we pull
from.
That's right. That's what we do here. All right, Joe, camp is underway. Before we get into the nuts and bolts, just give me a vibe check. What was the sights and sounds yesterday from Flowery?
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. I mean, like, first of all, you know, I just kind of get the not butterflies, but just, like, I get excited, like, when I go park, and see all the other fans walking next to me with their folding chairs and whatnot, and you see the massive line out in front of the facility. So just, and then obviously they come in and there's a big crowd. See players going over, over to the hill and signing autographs and doing those kinds of things. Didn't have anyone do a Cordero Patterson style, just like leave practice in the middle of drills to go sign autographs from the fans. But maybe that's something only Cordero Patterson ever had the right to do. But no, that was obviously great. You get the quote from Michael Penix saying that we, should be the best offense in the NFL, which that's just like a classic first day of training camp kind of, high vibes comment. So, and it's like, I don't know, like, with that comment specifically, like, I don't think anybody actually takes it serious, but everybody likes hearing it, even though they're not taking it seriously, because that's just the kind of thing you kind of want to hear on the first day of that confidence being exuded from the players. So, yeah, it was a great day overall.
Speaking of Michael Penix Jr., the other thing he said that made national headlines and made sort of the story out of day one about Kyle Pitts was that him walking in unprompted into the room and being like, yeah, you guys see we got pissed the ball on, huh? Yeah, we're going to do a lot more of that. Were you surprised that that sort of picked up steam and became the talking point nationally around day one for Falcons?
You know, I was a little, I don't know, I guess surprised is a word you could use for, like, my feelings of him just kind of uttering that, obviously in front of everybody, but before the press conference had kind of officially started. But it was kind of like a Kyle Pitts day. You know, like he was kind of the headliner of the day, and it started even before the practice where Raheem Morris was speaking about him. And, you know, I think Raheem does a good job of kind of addressing the Kyle Pitts situation head on, where he's like, listen, like everybody is, you know, like wondering how we get this guy back to his rookie year. Like that's always the conversation. Raheem Morris is not shy in avoiding it. And it's true, you know, that's the reason why. And the thing that was interesting about what Raheem said was that they could start to, you know, mix in a little bit more 12 personnel than what we saw last year, where they kind of said this, and, you know, again, and we take this with a grain of salt because we'll see when you know, it comes to the regular season if this actually plays out. Because they were saying last year they wanted to diversify, you know, Zach Robinson's offense from being such 11 personnel focused like he was under Sean McVay, obviously with Sean McVay calling the plays. Turns out they were in as much 11 personnel, or if not more, than Sean McVay was last year. The Falcons had the fewest amount of different personnel, basically groupings of 11 players on the field at a time on offense than any other team in the NFL. But anyway, all this to say is that, you know, there was some talk about Kyle Pitts kind of being split out more as a receiver. You know, Penix also spoke after the practice about, you know, finding good matchups for him and that being key. And if they can do that, then they can get him the football. But we also saw it, you know, during the practice of them, you know, getting him the ball and him doing these things, being split out, also being, you know, playing in line, of course, like he always would, but just like diversifying his game a little bit. And, you know, maybe going back to some of the things that are frankly most natural to him, which is kind of just playing as a big, powerful wide receiver, essentially. And he did do like the wide receiver drills and stuff and individual drills. So very interesting first day for Kyle Pitts. And I was willing to say is like, he's going to be back. I'm not there yet, but I do think that this is actually the right track. If he is to replicate or get close to what he did his rookie season, I think that what they put on display for him the first day is the way that you get there.
How long did it take after the Fields news for people to start saying Kirk Cousins?
It was funny. That was like going around, you know, the media, like the media all started talking about on the sidelines, like while we're watching practice. And, you know, I was kind of joking. It's like, man, you wonder if his agent, Mike McCartney, has like, you know, a signal in the radio to like tell him middle of practice. But and then, of course, it turns out to like really not be a significant injury. But it was definitely going around. And I got to say, you could almost sense it from the crowd, too, because I know there were people who were in the crowd who I was actually seeing tweet about it on social media while I was down there. So you know that it was kind of buzzing around the place when it happened, which was interesting. That's the first time I can remember where there's been like NFL news that's happening during an NFL practice that could, you know, drastically impact one of the, you know, key players that's currently on the team right now. But, you know, it turns out to be kind of a nothing burger. So we'll see.
A clean cut as we're talking to Joe Patrick on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, our Falcons insider. And make sure you check out his new podcast, Joe Patrick on Football, on the Odyssey app as well. Caleb McGarry, no longer looking as Viking-esque, but equally as large and intimidating with the short haircut and the trim beard. He addressed the media, and he was his usual no-nonsense self, but what did you take away from what he had to say about his first season becoming the blind side for Penix?
He's no-nonsense, but he's also, like, I just can't, like, I, like, giggle, like, while he's talking, just because of, he has, like, a wry sense of humor to him, and, you know, there were major question marks about him, or maybe not major question marks, but there were some question marks, I guess, coming into the camp because nobody had seen him over the course of the offseason. Of course, his absences had been excused by Raheem Morris. There was no fines for any of the Falcons players who missed any time during OTAs or, you know, that's not that they would get fined for that, but for mandatory mini camp, you know, absences or whatnot. And, you know, he's going into the last year of his contract, and the fact that he's now the blindside protector, you know, made you wonder if maybe there was going to, he could potentially leverage that situation to try to see if he could get something, you know, a new contract maybe for himself. He was asked about that situation, and while he's clearly willing to play, and he basically said as much, you know, when he talked to us, he did say, he goes, you know, there's nobody more willing to accept money than I am, or something along those lines, which I thought was just a humorous way to phrase that. But, you know, probably true, of course. And one of the journalists reminded him that he's speaking to journalists. So, we're always willing to take money as well. But, obviously, I think he would like to get something done, but, he clearly has a good rapport with the organization and obviously with his teammates as well. And he seems to, sounds like he's feeling better than he ever has. He had a off-season arthroscopic surgery, not really surgery, but like arthroscopic procedure on his ankle to get rid of some bone spurs, he said. And he said that his ankle now feels better than any joint has felt in his body for a long time now. So hopefully that can, produce some good play from him.
All right. So you know where I'm going to go with this, Joe. If you put 1 + 1 together, it equals 2. If you put Darnell Mooney leaving practice early yesterday and signing DJ Chark today, you can get some maybe unwarranted worry because we don't know the extent of the injury yet. What is your best sniffing around telling you about what's going on with Mooney and the reason for signing Chark?
Yeah, I think there could be something up here. I mean, we'll get more clarification on tomorrow. I don't want to kind of speak out of turn before we, actually get some solid confirmation on the situation from Raheem Morris. And I should say that the team is not necessarily required to give, a specific injury information or really any injury information, but I would think that we will hear something about it. It's going to be a talking point. And I saw the moment happened very clearly. It happened pretty much right in front of me. And when he came down, I went, ooh, I winced. And I turned to somebody, I said, it's incredible these football players can just kind of like get up from that. Because if that were me, I would need to be stretchered off. And that's how I winced, because I feel like how I would feel if that were to happen. So I was actually even kind of impressed by the fact that he got up basically after that. He stayed down for a little bit, but then a teammate, reached out his hand, he grabbed it and pulled himself up. He ran back to the area where the players were congregated behind the huddles, and you could see him like kind of putting his arms out. You could see him kind of like trying to do something in the upper body, and you would think that there would be something. If he does have an injury, it might be to like that shoulder area. So I think that's what we're looking out for. But he would certainly, if it is a significant injury and he's to miss time, you don't need me to tell you that that's a very big loss for this team, because not only is he productive, but he just adds like the archetype that he is and the speed that he presents to this offense is not so easily replicated.
All right, Joe, I need you to help me with something here a little outside the box. What's going on in MLS with this whole Messi skipping the All-Star game and getting suspended for a match thing? I was doing a little reading. It seems like Zlatan Ibrahimovic did the same thing a couple of years ago, but not a good look for your league when the best player in it is skipping the All-Star game and he's not injured.
No, it's not. And that's why I think that the commissioner, Don Garber, came out today and levied a suspension towards to Lionel Messi and Jordi Alba, who both skipped the All-Star game, to kind of like, put their foot down a little bit. And, saying like, you can't make a mockery of this product, essentially, that we sell and we put out there. We at least try to pretend like we take seriously. And then, of course, the Miami owners came out today. Jorge Mas, who's like a big power player in world soccer, and said that it was actually a club decision for them. So the club kind of protecting those players, saying that it was actually their decision. So, they're just saying that to kind of take some of the blowback off of the individuals. Having said that, Chris, I can't blame them. They're older players. I can't blame the club, certainly, for wanting to hold them out. And, I never know how my feelings on All-Star games kind of reflect the popular sentiment, the mass sentiment, because, I'm in a different role. I'm not really a quote-unquote fan. But I don't know what people are getting out of an MLS All-Star game. Again, they got to sell it. They can sell sponsorships on it and everything and make some money off of it, I'm sure. But it is ultimately an exhibition. And again, I can't blame any of these guys for wanting to skip it. And it's not like this is the first, we've seen this. I feel like in other sports, you see guys skip out on this stuff all the time, whether it's the NBA, where this has kind of become almost commonplace. Or, you know, in baseball, all-star games, you might see a guy with a little back injury or something. So, yeah, it's just one of those situations. I think the league's going to have to deal with it. I don't think they can really count on these kinds of star players, especially these older ones, wanting to play in this type of game.
Before I let you go, here's what I don't understand about it. To my knowledge, unless something changed, when Messi came to MLS, did he not get a stake in it? Like, isn't he vested into making sure that the product is as good as possible?
You know, that's a good question. You're asking the wrong guy, probably. He did get some sort of ownership. So I believe it's in his club, though, which I guess, like, you could say that that is also kind of part of MLS. You know, it is a single entity league, so I'm not exactly sure how all that breaks down, but I know that, like, his contract was kind of unique because it did involve some of this kind of equity stuff, because he's so important to what they're trying to do there in Miami. So, yeah, there is that. And so I think that that's why they got to get this sorted out. And it's not really like a really strong players union. It feels like there's a disconnection there between the players union, which and the league. And if they want to continue this type of thing, I think they got to just get people in a room, sit them down, and, you know, talk about the pain points that there are for players and the league, and figure out how they can best resolve the situation.
Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll check back in on Monday. Camp gets restarted on Tuesday. Looking forward to it.
All right, me too. Same. Thanks,
Chris. All right, that is Joe Patrick. There are Falcons Insider. And don't forget as well, before the break on Monday, make sure you check out Camp. But don't try to get a ticket. It's sold out, but we will be there if you're going to be there at, I think it's 9 to 1 on Saturday and Sunday. It'll be Grant, who am I talking? Yeah, Grant's going to anchor our Atlanta Falcons coverage. It'll be Sam and Greg. There's the G that I'm looking for. 9 to 1 on Saturday, and then Dylan and Big Mike Johnson on Sunday. So if you're going to be there, if you already have your ticket, make sure you say what up to our boys that are going to be there this weekend, off day Monday, and then back on Tuesday. And Dukes and Bell will be back at the Taj Mahal. Hooters on Tuesday as well. All right, to wrap things up, let's hear from Kayla McGarry. What did the new blindside protector have to say at camp yesterday? And also, I'm going to see Fantastic Four on Sunday. I need Orton to be my hype man. I'm a little worried. We'll talk about it next. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Closing out another fun week with y'all. I'm Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock, 6 to 10, each and every weeknight here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Bunch of stuff going on today. If you missed it, Zach Klein, now our very own Joe Patrick, Adam Schefter, they all have it. Darnell Mooney expected to miss, quote, a couple of weeks with a shoulder injury he sustained in practice, and related or unrelated, whatever the case may be, they did also sign a vet wide receiver DJ Chark to a one-year deal. Now, Chark and Mooney, coincidentally or not, have had a very similar career arc. They both have had one big season in their career. Well, now Mooney has two after his season in Atlanta. But coming into this year, Chark has one really big year, a couple of decent years, and it's just failed to be a consistently good wide receiver, but he has 1,000-yard potential, as did Darnell Mooney when he joined Atlanta. So going to be interesting to see how they shake it up in practice. Does Ray-Ray McCloud just slide up to wide receiver two? Does Chark get some run there? Does Kadarius Hodge get more involved in the offense? How do they split things out? Do we see more of Casey Washington? There's a lot of options still out there for the Falcons. And again, Mooney is expected to miss a few weeks, but that shouldn't, you would think, put him on a trajectory to miss any games. It certainly doesn't sound that way, but again, we'll wait for further clarification. Raheem Morris is going to speak again tomorrow, and Terry Fontenot is going to speak on Sunday. So with all of those things going on, you would think by the end of the weekend, by the time I hit the air back with you next Monday, we will have a lot more clarity on what's going on with Mooney and his shoulder. Again, if you are going to be out there tomorrow or Sunday, don't try to get a ticket now. You're a little too late, my friend. But if you are going to be there, Sam and Greg will be broadcasting. Mike Johnson and Dylan Matthews will be broadcasting. So a chance to go out and say what up to some of your favorite 92.9 The Game personalities. Take a picture, shake hands, kiss babies, whatever you need them to do. They're there to do it for you. All right, before we get out of here, a couple more things to do. Oh, let's hear from Caleb McGarry. He did speak yesterday, and he talked about the adjustment period to get used to being with Michael Penix this year.
Oh, boy. I mean, it takes months. Not a full season typically, but it takes quite some time because once you know your quarterback good enough, like, you can tell, like, just by the change in their voice, like, when the snap counts change and, like, you forgot to say something. Not that that's happened, but happens in football, and that's the thing you can pick up on once you really get to know your quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's about as thorough as an answer as you're ever going to get from Caleb McGarry, so take that with a grain of salt. Take it for what it's worth. He also talked about Penix being a lefty.
Not really. I mean, in that regard, like, modern offenses, a quarterback is going to turn a lot, like, when he's reading the field, so there's not really a blind side. At some point, his back's going to be to each side pretty much no matter what if he's got to read the field. It's not a quick dump.
Well, I mean, at least he's not putting a lot of pressure on himself with that answer. One more from Caleb McGarry. What he's seen from the rookie so far, this answer was a little interesting.
I mean, still early. They're rookies, man. We'll see it. We'll see how things go when bullets are live.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McGarry. That is the Caleb McGarry that I think we've all come to know and love, instead of the one that gave pretty thoughtful answers in those first two questions, including saying in the modern NFL there's not really a blind side anymore, which... Warren, have you ever heard that? I have never heard that before coming into that conversation.
I didn't realize that was a
positionless
tackles.
Yeah, I guess. Positionless basketball, positionless offensive line. I guess that's the way of the modern NFL, I guess. All right, we got about 5 minutes left here. And, Warren, I need your help. I think it'll be fine.
I know it's going to be fine.
I hope it's going to be fine. I am going to see Fantastic Four on Monday or on Sunday, and I'll report back with a full breakdown, spoiler free, of course, on Monday's show. But much like Superman, Oren, I go in reserved. I go in a little browbeaten. I go in a little hesitant. A lot of these modern DC and Marvel movies have just not been the same as they were from a decade ago. For DC, some would say that's a good thing, because the DC movies, for the most part, have largely stunk. And this Superman movie, did you see it yet, Oren?
I have not seen
it yet. Okay, it didn't stink. Not at all. It would be unfair of me to come on here and say that it stunk. I liked it. I know there's a lot of people out there that loved it. I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. And that's right where I sit with it. I appreciate the levity, because some of the Snyder stuff was just too dark. It felt like, you know, we're doing superhero movies here, folks. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, vigilante justice, you know, live looking at a GTA video game style. I mean, that's not what we need from our superhero movies. We do need some levity and brevity, and Superman brought that. I thought some of it was a little mistimed and misplaced, but overall it was definitely fun, definitely enjoyable. I would say bring the kids, but there's a lot of violence in this movie. Superman gets his butt whooped several times.
There's some violence going down.
Warren, he gets beat. Like, I've never seen a Superman movie where this is the most, like, close to a imperfect Superman there's ever been, like, physically. Because in all the other movies, it was never really about the physical, right? With Superman, it was like he was mentally flawed. He was dealing with, wrestling with being a representation of the citizens versus a superhero. And, like, it got really dark and bleak in the Snyderverse. And, again, I just didn't take to it. This one has some of those similar tones. But, again, it's a lot more lighthearted and a lot easier to digest. This is just me personally. I'm not a multiverse fan. I think Marvel really screwed that up royally. Six ways till Sunday. So the fact that, no spoilers here, but there is a multiverse element to it. That is shown in the previews. I won't go further than that, but I don't like multiverse stuff anymore. It's been ruined for me.
I think they've gotten the right tone with it now, in the sense that the multiverse still exists, but they've taken the emphasis now off of, I guess, the multiverse affecting things in the movies, and characters now just living in alternate reality, like living in alternate
universes.
Yeah,
like the second Doctor Strange movie for me just took it too far. I don't know what that is.
I love Ant-Man. I like Quantumania. Like, I like that movie a whole lot, but I get why people, you know, maybe weren't the biggest fans of it.
It's just too much. So, Oren, you're telling me from everything you've read, Fantastic Four so far looks like a thumbs up.
Yeah. First of all, I've heard of Vanessa Kirby's character. She is amazing. She is as good as they come in the comic book movies with her character of Sue Storm.
You mean she out-acted Jessica Alba?
She out-acted Jessica Alba. And
that's a tr- I shouldn't do that.
Oh,
that's
who was the one that played in the other one?
Kate Mara.
She out-acted
Her, by the way.
Kate Mara's a great actress.
Wasn't a fit in a superhero movie. Yeah. No, none of them were.
You had a weird cast, man. Like, Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan and Kate. Like, that cast was...
I feel like they just tried to take the three hottest actors at the time and just stick them in a movie.
It's just no storyline whatsoever.
And it just did not
work
at all.
Script was literally written like a week before they started filming it.
From everything I'm gauging, this version of it really focuses on the family dynamics.
It does.
Which is going to be interesting.
It does. You don't really get that in, well, the first iteration of it with Jessica Alba and Chris Evans and
Michael Chiklis.
Michael Chiklis, yeah. You don't get it in that one, but you do get it in this one. And, I mean, from what I understand, too, like, you actually see characters that are superheroes.
Now, here's a question. Because they show Silver Surfer in the preview as being a woman.
She is the actress that played in Ozark. She was the Ruth in Ozark.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. You may not know this because I just don't know. Is there a female Silver Surfer?
Yes, in the comic books, it does exist a female Silver
Surfer.
I
just didn't know if they changed it from a male to a female. Not a big deal either way, but I just didn't know because in the male, the only one I've ever interacted with is the male Silver Surfer. But and then you get the big boy.
Galactus.
First appearance in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, you don't see him. He's kind of hinted about in the first version of the Fantastic Four when the Silver Surfer is there. Like, you just sort of see the remnants of the cloud or whatever of him. But this one, you actually see, like, the gigantic form of him. And you get to see the Fantastic Four have a battle with Galactus, too, which is kind of cool.
Now, I'm interested, and I think... I'm just taking a pure guess. I have no idea. I've been avoiding spoilers. I think they're going to attempt to tie them in to be able to appear in an Avengers movie, I would think, because they're going to do that.
Well, they introduced at Comic-Con, when was it, last year, Robert Downey Jr.
As Doom.
And in both of the first two iterations of Fantastic Four, the guy who just recently died, who played Christian Troy in Nip Tuck, he was the first Doctor Doom. And then I forgot who played the second Doctor Doom in the second round of movies. But Doctor Doom is traditionally like the Fantastic Four's villain. But the one thing about Doctor Doom which makes him sort of a great villain is, like, Doctor Doom fights everybody.
Yeah.
So, but the idea is that it's all going to tie in some way eventually. Like, we haven't seen Doctor Doom yet. We just know they're filming Doomsday, which is the first big, I guess, Avengers team-up movie that we're supposed to get. But we don't know how he's going to be introduced. We don't know. Yeah, there's nothing about Doctor Doom we know right now except that he's going to be played by Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, and there's obviously going to have to be some...
You're going to have to
link to the multiverse.
Some loop, somehow, some way. Because
there's no way that anyone who watched all those Marvel movies could suspend disbelief enough to watch him play any other character other than Tony Stark.
Now, I'll say this too. This version, this universe that the Fantastic Four exist in is sort of like a past but also futuristic world where they're extremely technologically advanced, but it still kind of exists in like a past setting.
I wonder if there'll be any, like, how far back? Like, Captain America back? That's interesting.
I don't know who Captain America is in this universe. So.
Yeah, that's true as well. All right, well, I'll have a review for you on Monday. Hopefully, Oren's right, and it's a good flick, and we'll break it all down for you. Appreciate Big O. Appreciate all my good guests. Fun week here. Falcons training camp is underway. We'll recap what happens over the weekend. Darnell Mooney watch continues. We'll have all that more for you on Monday. I am out. I will talk to you on Monday at 6 o'clock. This has been Chris Thomas, the Night Turtle, every weeknight, 6 to 10, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and the Odyssey app.